Turn to the book of Isaiah. Book of Isaiah, chapter 41. We'll read verses 8 through verse 20. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend, thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, and called thee from the chief men thereof, and said unto thee, thou art my servant, I have chosen thee, and not cast thee away. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. Behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing, and they that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them and shalt not find them, even them that contended with thee. They that war against thee shall be as nothing, and as a thing of naught. For I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. Fear not, thou worm Jacob, and ye men of Israel. I will help thee, saith the Lord, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I will make thee a new sharp threshing instrument, having teeth. Thou shalt thresh the mountains and beat them small, and shalt make the hills a chaff. Thou shalt fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. And thou shalt rejoice in the Lord, and shalt glory in the Holy One of Israel. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue faileth for thirst, I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the shittah tree, and the myrtle, and the oil tree. I will set in the desert the fir tree, and the pine, and the box tree together, that they may see, and know, and consider, and understand together, that the hand of the Lord hath done this, and the Holy One of Israel hath created it. Isaiah, of course, prophesied during the time of the divided kingdom, directing the major thrust of his message to the southern kingdom, Judah. In the book of Isaiah, the first 35 chapters, for the most part, he condemns the empty ritualism of the day. He condemns the idolatry into which so many of the people had fallen. And he tells of the Babylonian captivity of Judah because of their departure from the Lord, because of their idolatry. In chapters 36 through 39, you basically have a historical interlude. And then in chapters 40 through 66, again, for the most part, he writes to comfort the people. After he has told them in the first 35 chapters that they would go into captivity, he begins to tell them in chapters 40 through 66 that they would return from Babylon, that they would return to their land. And he writes in these chapters to encourage them that when they do return, that they were to faithfully serve God. Even though their future was unknown, they were to just serve the Lord. Now, our text, of course, is a part of that encouragement to serve God. And it also serves as an encouragement for you and I as well. So I want to speak tonight on the encouragement to serve God in the unknown future. There, first of all, we need to see that there's a reminder here twice of our calling. We see it in verses 8 and 9, where we read that they were the servants of God. "Thou art my servant," he says, verse 8 and verse 9. It speaks of our relational position to God as his people. We are the servants of God. That never changes. Regardless of place, regardless of circumstances, regardless of the situation, regardless of the scenario, we are the servants of God. And that needs to be our mindset at all times. We must view ourselves as the servants of God. Now, the Bible teaches that there are two kinds of servants, or basically in the Old Testament, there were two kinds of servants. There was a hired servant. These, of course, had wages paid to them. They had certain rights. They had certain privileges, much like holding a job today. You do a service, you're paid, you have certain rights, you have certain privileges, whatever. Then there were bond servants. These received no pay. They had no rights of their own. They were completely at the disposal of their master, of their owner. Now, one would naturally think that being a bondservant would be a horrible thing, but that would depend upon who your master was. If you had a good master, that was not a horrible thing. And God says, "Thou art my servant." And every time we are referred to as servants of God, it is the bond servant. We're not a hired servant. There are many people who seem to think they are. They seem to think that if they do certain things, that God's going to give them certain things. Well, that's a hired servant. And you're not a hired servant. You're a bond servant. That is, all your rights are wrapped up in God. Doesn't mean you're going to be mistreated, because, again, who your owner is, who your master is. But a child of God, of course, can, we all do here, we can hold a variety of positions in life. We can be a parent. We can be a grandparent. You can be a banker, you can be a secretary, but first and foremost, whatever other positions we hold, thou art my servant. That's first and foremost. We must never, ever, ever forget that we are first servants of God. Therefore, being a servant of God, we are to be consecrated to God. We are to be set apart for God. To being a servant of God is to be, that's to be our intention. Our intention is to serve God. That should be the aim of our life, to serve God. We hold other positions, but the intention and aim of our life should be, I'm going to serve God through this position, whatever it is. That is to be our desire, to be a servant of God. As we look into the unknown future, that ought to be our anticipation. I'm going to serve God. Wherever I am, whatever my circumstances, I am a servant of God. So we are to serve God in everything that we are to do, that we do. Again, there's nothing wrong with being a banker. There's nothing wrong with whatever your position might be. But that position is never, ever to usurp the position of service to God, nor is it to be viewed apart from service to God. So, in reality, we are simply to plan on serving God. We don't know where we will be in the future. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. But whatever it is, it ought to be our plan. I'm going to serve God. Why? Because that's what I am. Servant of the Lord. Being a servant of God should define us. It should have an altering effect upon our thoughts, our attitudes, our actions, our day. It ought to alter the way we look at everything. So we are to plan to serve God with our life. And if we do that, it keeps everything else in proper perspective. It keeps priorities in order. So the future is unknown. We know not what a day may bring forth, but whatever it is, we are the servants of God. So he reminds them of this two times, that they were the servants of God. Now in relation to that statement, notice verse 8, "Thou Israel art my servant." He uses the name Jacob, and he uses the name Israel. But he says, "Thou Israel art my servant." Israel, of course, was the new name given to Jacob. And it is emblematic of a miraculous and transforming work of God in the life of Jacob. It is emblematic of a work of grace in Jacob. "Thou, Israel, art my servant." So immediately there is a reminder of what God has done. There is a reminder of grace. And that is our incentive to serve, because of what God has done, because of a transformation by grace, we are to serve God. Now, reading on in verse 8, notice also it says, "Jacob, whom I have chosen." Jacob, whom I have chosen. Doesn't say Israel, whom I have chosen. That's the new name. It says Jacob, whom I have chosen. So the object of choice was not Israel, which means a prince, a ruler. But the object of choice was Jacob, meaning a supplanter, a contender. Jacob, of course, was a user. He was a usurper. He was a deceiver. He was a conniver. He was a schemer. He was a pretender. He was an individual who insisted on his own way, and he was a resister of God and God's way. In verse 14, he is referred to as a worm. A worm. Showing that as Jacob, he was endangered. As Jacob, he was insignificant. He's a worm. As Jacob, he is despicable. But it's as Jacob that he was chosen. So it is with you and I. God didn't choose us based on what he would make us in the new birth. He chose us as Jacob. He chose us when we were conniving and resisting God. He chose us when we were the filthy sinner. We must never get this reversed. We must remember the object of choice. Jacob have I loved. So, God chose Jacob. Thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, verse 9, and called from the chief men thereof, and said unto thee, Thou art my servant. I have chosen thee. Talking about Jacob. That is an incentive to serve the Lord. That God chose us when we were Jacob. And then notice what else it says there in verse 9. And not cast thee away. God chose Jacob. That's grace. God didn't cast him away. That's mercy. And both are incentives to serve God. And both ought to make us desirous of being a bond servant of God. Wrapping our entire life in Him. You see, people will make statements. They say that they have served God and things didn't work out like they wanted, so they're not going to serve Him anymore. Well, you see, there's a lot of problems. But number one is they viewed themselves as a hired servant. That's a problem right there. You don't serve God for what you get out of it. You serve God because He's God. And an incentive to do so is that we were Jacob and God chose us and God didn't cast us away. Then notice, so there's we are the servants of God. And notice a spirit that is necessary in serving God. In verse 17, he refers to his people, Israel at this point. Jacob has been transformed in Israel. He refers to them as the poor and needy. He's talking about God's people. And this speaks of their spirit. This is the spirit that they are to possess. If they are going to serve God, this is the spirit that they must possess. And I believe it is the result of living in the realization of verses 8 and 9. When we realize that we were Jacob when God chose us. God did a work of transforming grace. And we became something that we weren't before. Jacob became Israel. When you understand that, the result is you realize that you're poor and needy, which is equivalent to the poor in spirit in Matthew 5 and verse 3. This isn't talking about spiritual poverty. We are to be poor in spirit, which is simply the opposite of pride. It is the opposite of self-reliance. It is the opposite of self-confidence. Jacob was one of the most self-reliant and proudful individuals that's ever lived. We are Jacob. We still have a lot of Jacob in us. But the poor and needy, or the poor in spirit, are those who realize that they have nothing in and of themselves. They can do nothing in and of themselves. They need all things, and therefore they are seeking people. They seek God. They seek their master. They feel no self-sufficiency in and of themselves. They realize that all their sufficiency is of the Lord. They are equivalent to the broken in spirit in Psalm 55, which is one who has simply been disabled to his own ways. Again, this is absolutely necessary if we're going to serve God. But we will never be poor in spirit, and we'll never be poor and needy until we realize Jacob have I chosen. Until we realize that God chose us when we were Jacob. Until we realize that God did a work of transforming grace. And then in the rest of the verses that we read for our text, we want to look at the exhortations that the Lord makes, some of the promises that God makes. Again, he's telling them that you're going to go into Babylonian captivity. But in these last chapters, 40 through 66, he's telling them you're going to come out of Babylonian captivity. And when you do, there's a lot of work to be done. There is a God to be served, and you're to serve Him. And he's telling them all these things that we're about to look at to encourage them in service. Everything he's telling them is for the purpose of service to God. Again, their future is unknown. Once they come out of Babylonian captivity, who knows where they're going to end up. But in verse 10, verse 13, and verse 14, there is the exhortation, fear not, fear not. Verse 10, verse 13, verse 14. That exhortation, those exact words, occur 74 times in the Word of God. The phrase, be not afraid, which would be the same thing, occurs 29 times. So we have a total of 103 times. Fear not, be not afraid. 103 times. That indicates something very significant. Now the word fear occurs 400 times. And the word afraid occurs 193 times. Fear is one of the enemy's greatest tools to keep us from service. Fear can take on many shapes and many forms. There can be fear of being laughed at. There can be fear of being rejected. There can be fear of losing a job or losing whatever. It goes on and on. But fear is debilitating and a crippling force when it comes to God's service. And that is why we are told, fear not. Be not afraid. You are my servants. You have the responsibility to serve, but if you are going to serve, you must not be fearful. You must not be afraid. Again, fears of great variety. In Psalm 34 and verse 4, the psalmist said, I sought the Lord and He heard me and delivered me from all my fears. Plural. And we all have more than one fear. We have a variety of fears. But whatever the fear is, fear has the power to alter thinking. That can be a good thing. If you're in a fire and you're afraid, that's going to alter your thinking. I better not sleep anymore. I better get out of this house. But fear alters thinking. Fear alters perception. Fear alters priority. You may have gone to bed an hour ago with the priority of sleeping. But a fire is raging through your house. Guess what? Your priorities have changed. Fear changes your priorities. Sadly, that works to our detriment when it comes to serving God. Causes us to think wrongly, distorts our perception, gets our priorities all mixed up. How many people have convinced themselves that it is so? That they can't obey God in this specific area because if they do, they won't be able to support their family. Well, first of all, that's not true. Because God says it isn't true. That's a fear that has altered your priorities. Fear alters behavior. But the Lord doesn't merely just tell us, don't be afraid. But He gives us a reason. Every single time, God says, fear not, He gives us a reason why we shouldn't. And the reason is always the same. The reason is Himself. Notice verse 10. Fear not, for I. That's the reason. Verse 13. Fear not, I. Verse 14, fear not, thou worm Jacob, and ye men of Israel, I. So He tells them not to be afraid, and He says the reason you're not to be afraid is because of Me. We see this pattern repeated throughout the Word of God. Genesis chapter 15 and verse 1. After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, fear not, Abram. I am thy shield. He tells them not to be afraid. He gives them the reason. The reason is God. Genesis 21. Verse 17, last part of the verse, he's talking to Hagar. He says, fear not, for God. For God. God is the reason not to fear. Genesis 26, verse 24. The Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father, fear not, for I am with thee. We see the same thing in Genesis 46, verse 3. We see it again in Exodus 20, verse 20. We see it again in Deuteronomy 31, and verse 6. Again in Joshua chapter 8, and verse 1. Joshua chapter 10, verse 25. Isaiah 35, verse 4. Isaiah 43, verses 1 and verse 5. And again in Jeremiah 46 and verse 27. Every time God says, fear not, He gives a reason. For I. We're not to fear, because fear is a great hindrance in service to God. And the reason we're not to fear is God. That tells me this, that our faith must be bigger than our fear. Our faith in the reason not to fear must be bigger than what we fear. Faith is the cure for fear. That's what Jesus said. John 14 and verse 1, he said, "Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me." He says, be not troubled, what? Believe. That's faith. So if we're going to serve God in the unknown future, we must not be afraid. Fear is rampant today. It is rampant in the world. We can understand why the world would be fearful. But it is also rampant among children of God. They live in fear. But God says, fear not, for I. And God tells us, the reason you cannot be afraid is you are my servant. And you are to serve me in the unknown future. So be not afraid. In verse 10 of our text, he says, be not dismayed. That means, be not shaken, be not unsettled, be not disturbed and distressed. The word occurs 31 times. And in most cases, it is used just as it is in our text, in connection with fear. The two go hand in hand. Fear and dismay. And the remedy is the same. Notice in Deuteronomy chapter 31, Deuteronomy chapter 31, and verse 8. And the Lord said, he it is that doth go before thee, he shall be with thee, he will not fail thee, neither forsake thee. Fear not, neither be dismayed. Why? Because of everything said before that. God. So the remedy for fear is God. The remedy for dismay, which is the result of fear, is God. We read that again in Joshua 1, verse 9, Joshua 8, verse 1, Joshua 10, verse 25, 1 Chronicles 20, verse 15, or 2 Chronicles 20, verse 15. So if we're going to serve God, we cannot fear, we must not be dismayed. That is, we cannot be shaken and unsettled and disturbed and distressed by everything that's going around us. Going on around us. The reason? God. So again, our faith must be bigger than our dismay. God encourages us to serve Him in the unknown future by giving several promises. And the promises are based upon who He is. It's not based upon who we are. It's not based upon who our friends are. It's based upon who He is. Verse 10, again, he says, fear thou not, for I am with thee, be not dismayed. But then notice what he says, for I am thy God. I am thy God. All the promises that he makes has its basis in this fact. I am thy God. In verse 13, he says, I, the Lord, thy God. In verse 14, he says, the Lord and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. And in verses 16 and 20, and also in verse 17, I the Lord, I the God of Israel. So these promises that he makes to us. They're all addressed to a variety of needs that we have in our service to God. In our service to God, a variety of needs are going to prop up. And God has already made promises for every one of those needs. There is a need that is going to prop up in your life that God has not already made a promise for. And every one of those promises have their basis in who God is. We can trust the promise because the one who made the promise, God. The remedy for fear and dismay is faith in God. He says, "For I am with thee." And faith in the fact that there is a personal connection with Him. I am thy God. And then He makes these promises. In verse 10, He says, "I will strengthen thee." I will strengthen thee. I will. I, your God. I, the one who chose you as Jacob and transformed you by grace into Israel, I will strengthen thee. So there is a power of which God is the source. Do you know what strength you are going to need tomorrow? No, you don't. You don't know what strength you're going to need 5 minutes from now. We don't know the strength that we will need in a week from now, in 2 weeks from now. But God does. And God has already promised that He'll give it to us. So what are we to do? We're just planning on serving God. Because He's going to give us the strength. Well, what are we going to do if such and such happens in the United States? What are we going to do? Well, we're going to plan on serving God and trust that God will give us the strength that we need in that hour. I will strengthen thee. Well, don't you think that we need to be making preparations? You don't even know what you're preparing for. So how can you make preparations? What is it that you're preparing for? And you may come up with something, but that's something you think will happen. What if that doesn't happen? What if something happens that you didn't think would happen? You see, it all comes back to faith in believing the promise of God. I will strengthen thee. There is a power, there is a vigor, there is a force that only God can give. And He promises to give it to us. We are His servants. And we must simply just plan to serve God. And we know that that service is going to require a strength that is beyond us. That's true today. That's true tomorrow. That's true 5 years from now. However bad it gets, we're going to need a strength that is beyond us. And God says, "I will strengthen thee." That's an encouragement to serve God in the unknown future. In verse 10, verse 13, and verse 14, He says, "I will help thee." Conveying the idea of assistance and aid. Also in the word help, there's the thought of relief. Relief. Be cure. to be restoration. It could be preservation. It could be prevention. God preventing you from doing something, God preventing something from happening. Either way, it's help. It can be deliverance. It can be provision. It can be guidance, instruction, enablement. God helps us every day. Every day. He says, I will help thee. We're weak. We're fragile. We're inadequate. We're insufficient. But there's help in God. And God has promised to help. God helps in ways that we don't even think about. God helps, of course, by strengthening us. When he says, I will strengthen thee, well, that's helping us. So God helps by giving us strength. God helps by consoling us. God helps by assuring us. God helps us when he draws us to himself. God helps us when he causes us to remember that he's God. God helps us by correcting us. God helps us by fixing us. He can help us by, sometimes we need more than fixing, we need overhauling. That's what God does. That's how Jacob became Israel. God helps by reviving us, by conforming us. God can help, believe it or not, by sending trials and difficulties into your life. That could be a help. God helps, again, by preventing us from doing certain things. God has prevented you and I from doing things that we don't even know about. And he helps us by doing that. God helps us by putting roadblocks in our way. God knows how stubborn we are, so sometimes he has to just put a roadblock there. He says, oh, you may think you're going there, but you're not. God helps. We look at those roadblocks as inconveniences. But we need to view them as God's help. God helps by preventing things from entering into our lives. Even those things that we consider to be blessings. God helps by not giving us everything we want. I'm glad that God hasn't given me everything I've ever asked for. God helps by saying no. No, you're not doing that. You're not doing it. That's God helping us. So God's means of help really are unlimited. And God can use anything to help us. And that's why many times we don't recognize God's help. 2 Chronicles 14:11, and Asa cried unto the Lord his God and said, Lord, it is nothing with thee to help, whether with many or with them that have no power. Doesn't matter to God. But God says, I will help thee. Three times in our text, I will help thee. Do you know what kind of help you're going to need tomorrow? No, you don't. You may think you do, but you don't. We don't know what kind of help we're going to need in an unknown future. But God says, you're my servants, and you're to serve me. And to encourage you to do that, I want you to know I will help you. He says in verse 10 also, I will uphold thee. That is, I will sustain thee. I will support you. I will keep you. Which tells us that there's going to be times of weakness and fainting. But there will also be the sustaining power of God. So go forth and serve Him. In verse 13, he says, "For I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, that's a feeling of His nearness. Someone holds your hand, you know it, and they're near. It's a sign of compassion, sympathy, empathy, consolation. He said, I'll hold your hand. And oh, how many times we just need God to hold our hand. In verse 17, again, all this is to encourage us to serve. I, the Lord, will heal them, or hear them. Revealing His care, revealing His concern. Revealing His availability. Also, he said there in verse 17, I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I won't abandon them. I won't disown them. Now, that says something. When God says, I will not forsake them, it says a lot of things. But one thing it does say is that you and I are going to do things that the human mind would think, He will abandon me. He will disown me. We're going to fail. We're going to fail miserably. But God has never abandoned me. Never. He didn't abandon me when I was Jacob. He didn't disown me when I was Jacob. Certainly, He's not going to now that He has transformed us. That's God's promise that He will remain faithful. We may not, but He will. Also in verse 17, notice there are some places that God's people will find themselves in. Again, keep in mind, all of this is, we are His servants. We are to serve Him. There will be places of danger. Places where there is no water, we see. They will seek water, and there is none. That's danger. You got to have water. You can't live without it. So that is a position of danger. And if we're in a position of danger, what are we to do? We're to serve God. We're to serve God. There would be places of extremity and misery. Notice their tongue faileth for thirst. But in these places, notice, I the Lord, I the God of Israel. That changes the places. In verse 18, there are high places, there are valleys, there is the wilderness, there is the dry land, and in verse 19, there's the desert. He's telling these people, you're going to return from Babylon. And sometimes you're going to find yourself in the high places, other times in the valleys, in the wilderness, in the desert. But whatever place you find yourself in, you're my servants. And you're to serve God. Each of these places have their own needs and difficulties. As you read those verses, you see there are no rivers. in the high places. There are no fountains in the valleys. There is no pool of water in the wilderness. And there are no springs of water in the dry land. But in all of those places, there's God. And in all of those places, He can do the miraculous. He brought Jacob to Israel. And He can transform all of these places. And that's what He promises to do. He says, I'll open rivers in high places. I'll put rivers there that were never there before. You know, people will say, well, I can't go there. There's no job. There's not this. There's not that. You go there, God will put it there. That's what He says. That's what He says. That's the way God works. We want it there before we're there. And God would make the wilderness a pool of water. And just say He would put a pool of water in the wilderness, He'd make the whole thing a pool of water. And the dry land, springs of water. So there are unknown places for each of us. But if we're saved, we're called to be the servants of God. And wherever we go, whatever that place is, that's what we're to do. So, there are unknown places for each of us, but God is. And He is who He is. And He knows how. And He's able. And He's present. And He's near. And He excels all situations. And He reigns supreme. So God says, serve me. Serve me. We need to grasp who God is. We need to recognize, yes, we need miracles. But recognize who God is. In the future, we may find ourselves in a variety of places. But the place does not determine whether or not we serve God. But in every place, we are to determine to serve God. Not because of the place, but because of God. So you see, circumstances, whatever happens in the future of the United States of America, does not change our position before God, which is a servant of God. It does not change our responsibility. We are to serve God. Whatever the place, hear God say, as we spoke this morning, I am God. I am God. I am God. He's in control and He's able. Now notice in closing in verse 20, God says all these miracles that He would do. And then in verse 20, here's the reason He's going to do these things. That they goes back to the poor and needy, which is you and I. That they may see. That is, that they may perceive. That they may discern. That they may see and know. To know is to be awakened to a fact. that they may perceive, discern, and be awakened, and consider, that is, to reflect upon, and to understand, that is, to conclude, that the hand of the Lord hath done this. That is, you're in the high place, there's no river, and all of a sudden God makes one. You're in the valley, there's no fountain, God makes one. God says, I do this that you might know that the hand of the Lord hath done this. That is, you experience the miraculous, the Holy One of Israel hath created it. And seeing that, what does that do? That encourages us to further serve God. That gives us new incentive to serve God. Here I was in this desert, there was no water, and God miraculously put water there. Next time you're in a desert, hopefully you remember, well, the last desert I was in, God put water. I believe He can do the same thing in this desert. And that just gives you incentive to go on. So our service to God is not dependent upon circumstances. It's not dependent upon the government, the country in which we live. Our reason for serving God is not favorable circumstances, nor is it a reason not to serve God because of unfavorable circumstances. There's one reason to serve God. He's God. He's God. He's called you to serve. And that's what we're to do. We're to serve Him. So the future is unknown. We don't know how long we have in this life. You can make plans. Nothing wrong with making plans. Just don't become a slave to your plans. Don't get overly disturbed when your plans don't work, but submit to God. Nothing wrong with making plans. But every plan you make, the number one plan in that plan ought to be, I'm going to serve God. You can say, I'm going to retire in 2017. That's fine. But what are you going to do then? Serve God. That's the plan. I'm going to change jobs in 2016. That's fine. But what are you going to do? I'm going to serve God in that job. That needs to always be our plan. Serve the Lord. Serve the Lord. There may come a time when we lose our mental capacities and we don't know what's going on. Of course, that's different. But if we've got to go into a hospital, or we've got to go into rehab for a couple weeks, our plan ought to be, I'm going to serve God there. That's what I'm going to do. Because that's what God's called us to do. There's somebody there that needs to hear. There's no accidents. There's no coincidences. So if God wants you or me in a nursing facility for a month for rehab, then He wants us to serve God there for that month. That's the way we're to look at it. That's the way we ought to look at everything. We don't know what the future holds, but we're to serve God. But don't ever take the attitude, I've served God all these years and now look what's happened. Well, you see, all those years, my friend, you were a hired servant. And you've lost a lot of blessings. and being a hired servant. You need to be a bond servant. So let's just serve God. That needs to be our intent. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us.